This is CliffCentral.com.
It's a Wednesday and it's the football show. A show about football. A show about football. Sexism in sport. The international break. Madiba magic. Leicester City. Franz Beckenbauer. Football love letters. Mavuso. The Gupta family's attempts at Yellowbone State capture. And Basarashi Chukwuze, our guest in the house tonight. How are you guys doing today? Hi Basa, how are you? Don't be nervous. Just calm down. Don't be nervous.
Trying to be nervous.
Okay. Are you trying to be nervous? You try to be calm.
Try to be calm.
Okay. Because you need to be calm. It's just a football show. No one really cares what we say here, except for those people who really love us who are out there. And we thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. So today, it seems I'm alone again. Durek Jesus, Red Nandi, Theo Mojo are all living their best lives, spending the money that they actually do earn, real money that I clearly don't have any more because, you know, lifestyle. Anyway, we shall continue with the intros. Let's start there. Rumor has it that she was once offered a job by the Gupta family but turned it down because she felt that by accepting it, she would be betraying her Yellowbone privilege, Yellowbone upbringing, and her Yellowbone heritage. And that as soon as she was offered the job, she reported her disgust and contempt to the Department of Yellowbone Affairs headed by the eternal Yellowbone, Minister Lindiwe Sisulu. All we know is that she is the godmother of all things yellow, the last defense against Yellowbone State capture, the public protector of the color yellow, the guardian of the Yellowbone Constitution, the goddess Nandi Shabalala, who is not with us today because she's actually doing a real job. And the next guy, Durek Jesus, I'm assuming. Yes, we are told that he was once offered a job by the Guptas as well, but had to refuse it because their ambitions of state capture were not aligned to the revolutionary and liberation credentials of his most revered American twang, which, as we all know, was one of the reasons why Mandela was released from prison. I do not write this stuff. This is all crazy. All we know is that he is the in-house oracle of all things football, the man whose twang has the tensile strength of 1,000 Zulu assegais, the incorruptible Nigerian, the exemplary immigrant, a model of virtue, the God, Durek Jesus, who's also not here today. But, what just happened? All this loud music. And then, we are told that he was once offered a job by the Guptas as well, but turned it down because he once bought a top-of-the-line Sahara computer to conduct his trades on the JSC, but had to abandon the machine when it developed a mind of its own and tried to capture his stocks and convert them into Gupta-held shares. All we know is that he's the godfather of black privilege, the man who always goes along on telecommunication stocks because apparently you never lose with tech. The man with the biggest collection of pastel cardigans in the side of the equator, the god, Theo Mojo, who is also not here. What is this, Duncan? Why am I alone here? Sorry, I was just ranting to Duncan. Now I have to do my own intro. We are told that he was once offered a job by the Guptas and that he did not turn it down until the last minute when he realized that they did not have stripper welfare and medical aid as part of their corporate social responsibility objectives. And that once he learned of this travesty, he embarked on a national roadshow where he implored all blue chip JSC listed companies to create a fund for stripper welfare and medical aid. All we know is that he is the philanthropic Philistine, the god, the only man currently lobbying parliament to legislate for decent working hours and fair pay for exotic dancers across the length and breadth of this wonderful country. The god, ladies and gentlemen, comrade question. I have to clap for myself. Oh, so great. Oh, thank you, Duncan. Thank you so much, Duncan. Thank you. And then finally, João Matthews. We are told that he was once offered a job as well by the... Who have these guys not given a job? Anyway, we are told that he was offered a job by the Guptas to be at the helm of their national drive to recruit all the cool hipster kids from Braamfontein and breed them into an elite super woke hipster soldier who would win wars by fighting ironically. Unfortunately for the Guptas, he had to turn it down because he's the only hipster who showers and does not care or share the Guptas' view of world domination by hipster. All we know is that he's the in-house cool kid, aka Fade Matthews, aka Antonio Bandana, aka the man who used to slide into people's DMs but no longer does it, the god João Matthews, who shall be joining us shortly as soon as he arrives at Cliff Central headquarters. Now, I'm joined in the studio by a very special man. His name is Basarashe Chikosi. He does have a blog, Basarashe C at .vix. Is it .vix?
Yeah.
BasarasheC.vix.com. He speaks about Arsenal Football Club and a whole host of other things that really just grate my gonads. Basar, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Elif. I'm glad to be here.
You're nervous as fuck. That's what you are. Anyway, let's start with the EPL this season. I mean, this weekend. A lot of stuff happening there, but let's start with some EPL results. We're going to start off with Everton 0, Arsenal 2. Iwobi shines as the Gunners get back to winning ways. Is Alex Iwobi the real deal, or is the title too far away for the Gunners? Let's hear Basrash's thoughts on Everton first, and then we'll hear your thoughts on Arsenal.
Yeah, let me start with Everton. I think they perform badly. I mean, they've ground out good results over the season, but against Arsenal, I think they just succumbed. I don't know for what reason, but I've always seen Everton as a mid-table team. They don't actually have the credentials to actually, you know, compete
challenge.
For any silverware. I mean, they're one of those teams that basically dare to spoil other people's party.
Mm-hmm.
I think enough of Everton. Coming to Arsenal, what should I say? I think after bowing out of the FA Cup as well as the Champions League, I think it was a good way to redeem themselves. Coming back, they needed to show their fans that, okay, listen, they still have what it takes to, you know, mount a rather late challenge for the title. But I think it's rather too late. The way I look at it is it's basically two teams left now for the title. And
yeah,
if Arsenal are to do anything, it's going to be miraculous, to say the least.
It's going to be miraculous. Is that... I know an Arsenal fan who would disagree with you, but he's on his way. João Matthews will disagree with you. And he thinks with the games that Arsenal have, I think, what is it, 8 games left?
Yeah, 8 games
for everyone. And this has been the most unpredictable Premiership season that of living memory, to be honest. The first time, I think, since Blackburn in 94-95, where you'd probably have none of the traditional top four. And by traditional, I don't mean Manchester City and Chelsea. But I mean, none of those teams are challenging for the league this year. And everyone was thinking this is Arsenal's chance to actually run away with something and give Wenger a present before he inevitably retires, we are told, in 2017. But, you know, true to Arsenal, they have found a way to mess this up. They're top of the table, January the 3rd. They are 5 points or 3 points on top of the log and riding high. How did we get to this place with Arsenal? Where is it a problem with how Wenger prepares the team? Is there a problem with... Because there has to be some kind of mental fragility if the same mistakes are repeated year in, year out. And it must also speak to how a manager prepares his teams for certain parts of the season that are really important if you want to challenge for anything. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are very simple. I think the way I look at Arsene Wenger as a manager is he simply lacks the winning attributes, should I say, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do everything necessary, but when it gets to the business end of the season, they just seem to fall away. And it speaks much to the inability to prepare for the crucial games.
Okay.
I mean, they lost to Manchester United, but I mean...
With an 18-year-old who had to do his homework, yeah.
Exactly. And losing to Swansea City when they were, 2-0 up, if not 1-0 up, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was 1-0 up, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my analysis of that, it's simply a manager that doesn't know how to cross the line.
Okay.
I mean, had it been somebody who's probably used to those positions, probably a Mourinho or probably a Carlo Ancelotti, I think he'll prepare the team well enough to be able to cross over the line.
But is that a fair criticism of Arsene Wenger, though? He's the guy who built a team that went unbeaten all season. You can't say he doesn't know how to win. We can't say that. Can we say that?
We definitely can. I mean, look back 3 seasons. Well, not 3 seasons. The season in which it happened.
Yeah.
How many teams were challenging for the title then? I think it was only...
Chelsea was there. Chelsea was challenging for the season.
Yeah, I think Chelsea was...
And Man United were challenging as well.
Yeah, I think Chelsea was in a... was only starting to get up there. I think Tottenham was...
It was Claudio Ranieri's first season at Chelsea. Yeah. Second season, sorry.
Second season, yeah. I think basically the title was between two teams then, mm-hmm. to be honest. I mean, Manchester City were not there. Tottenham were not there. I mean, we couldn't even talk of Man City.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically two teams vying for the title, basically. Yeah. So I think in that case, had he won his game against Manchester United, it was basically, you know,
beat the other teams and you win the trophy.
And you win the trophy. Now, which is a different case now. You've got, what, 4 or 5 teams all competing for the top honours?
Yeah.
And in that case, it really separates the men from the boys.
Uh-huh.
And I think Wenger has been caught short.
Okay. So, a very interesting point coming from Basarashe. He says, Arsene Wenger has basically failed to adapt to the conditions of a changing Premier League that has moved on without him, essentially. I don't know. I think a lot of people have something to say about that. Unfortunately, today our WeChat isn't working, but you can tweet us at FootballShowCC, or alternatively, you can follow us on Periscope where we are doing nothing, or you can call us on 0861-555-189. Now, let us move on to... Oh, yes, Alex Iwobi. What do you think about that young man?
He's a bright talent. I was really pleased to see his performance. He really didn't look out of place.
Yeah.
He really slotted in well. I think give him more time. And I think next season, probably if he gets more game time, he'll slowly come into his own. But yeah, he gave a good impression of himself first off.
Yeah, I mean, he's JJ Okocha's nephew. And he's an English... He's been playing for the English junior teams up until now. And he's decided to go and play for Nigeria. He has played in 2 friendlies for Nigeria, I think. And he's got food poisoning now. So people are having this conspiracy on Twitter about how it's most likely that the English FA poisoned him because he's got food poisoning. But anyway, that's another story for another day. Manchester City 0, Man United 1. Rashford continues scoring goals before he has to go home and finish his homework. So, have Man City already checked out of the Pellegrini era? That's the first question with regard to Man City. And then you have Man United, who continue to flatter to deceive. One week they'll beat Arsenal, the next week they'll go and get beaten by, I don't know, Bristol Rovers or something like that.
Yeah.
What is the problem at United right now? What do you think whoever is going to be coming in as the next manager? Because I don't think the situation is, you know, Van Gaal can stay beyond the season anyway.
Yeah.
It's untenable for him there. What do you think they need to do? What has gone wrong? And what can be done to fix it before they even become the next Liverpool?
Let me start with Man City.
Okay.
To answer your first question, have they checked out of the league? Definitely they have. I think Pellegrini wants to, you know, end his era on a bang. And that is he's trying to make an impact in the Champions League.
Okay.
And given that, I think this is a lesson to any football club around the world. You do not appoint a manager when there's one still incumbent. I think it's clear to see that the moment it was announced that Guardiola was going to take over at the
age, they haven't won. I think they've like moved like 4 points
exactly
since that announcement in February. Yeah,
exactly. So I think it's a lesson to everyone. I think Pellegrini sees the end and he's not really worried. I think, like I said, I think his main focus is the Champions League right now, which they haven't done well ever since
he took over,
the resources that they have. I believe they should be finishing quarterfinals, semifinals,
mm-hmm.
which they haven't done for the past...
This is their first time in the quarters now. Yeah.
In the quarters, mm-hmm. yeah. So I think Pellegrini basically sees his tenure at Man City basically ending with, you know, probably a good showing in the Champions League. I mean, they're facing PSG. I give them a 50-50 chance. If they turn up on the day, who knows, they might get through. Coming to Man United, I don't even know where to start. I think there was just a catalogue of errors that were made at United. Firstly, I think Louis van Gaal, I think, needs to loosen up in as far as his philosophy is concerned. I also think he hasn't gelled with the culture of the club.
Yeah.
I think he made a lot of wholesale changes that weren't informed. I mean, some of the transfer window decisions that he did. I personally don't agree with.
Yeah, I mean, this guy spent £250 million, and this is a team still struggling to get into the top four.
Yeah.
Where Leicester City have spent, I don't know, 9 or 5 million or whatever they've spent to be 5 points on top of the league with 8 games to go.
Exactly. Mm. When they fired David Moyes, they thought Moyes was the worst manager to have ever, you know, managed the Manchester United. The Man United that season finished 7th on the log and...
Yeah.
They didn't make it to... They didn't qualify for Champions League football. I actually predict a season where it's going to happen under Louis van Gaal. I don't see the... I don't see them finishing in fourth position or anything above. And I don't see them. I mean, if that's going to happen, they're obviously not going to play Champions League football.
Yeah.
I actually think he basically broke the spine of the team, to be honest. I mean, he let a lot of club stalwarts leave. Guys that I felt still could have given United something.
Van Persie, Patrice Evra, Chicharito. Van Persie, Chicharito. Evra, I mean, Evra is playing in the Champions League with Juve still. Exactly. Yeah, he was.
Exactly. Yeah. Evra made the Champions League last year with Juventus.
With Juve again.
Chicharito in the Bundesliga. I mean, he's been banging in the goals. Mm. So I think there's a whole catalogue of issues that happened there. Even the debauch of Di Maria. Mm. I mean, one of the best wingers in world football.
Yeah, and I mean, look at what he's doing at PSG.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think Van Gaal, to start with, he didn't fit into the culture. And I think he came in without having done his homework well.
About the players that are there. Yeah.
Exactly.
He just came to change things. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And again, his philosophy. He's a very defensive coach. He prefers the 3-5-2 formation where, you know, basically the whole essence of his philosophy revolves around ball possession and retention, which I think doesn't work in the English Premiership.
Mm-hmm.
I think had he done his homework in as far as how United were successful under Sir Alex Ferguson and tried to implement some of those things, I think they'll find themselves in a different position than they are today.
Okay. Just another note on Man City. So Pep Guardiola is coming in, and you have players who essentially don't see eye to eye with him. And we're talking about Yaya Toure. And there's also doubt over the futures of people like Wilfred Bony. Samir Nasri hasn't had a good season at all this season. Mm-hmm. What is Pep going to do when he gets into that Man City squad, when he gets into that Man City dressing room and he sees all these players? What is the way forward for Pep? How do you make this team that has every resource at its disposal but is failing to perform? I mean, City should have run away with this league.
Yeah, essentially.
It's simple and straightforward. They should have run away with it. But, I mean, now they're languishing in fourth with West Ham and Man United a point behind them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I think for Pep, like any big coach around the world, I think the first thing he's going to do is he's going to identify his personnel, people that are going to, you know, sing from the same hymn book as him.
Yeah.
People that are going to fit into his philosophy.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the Kolo Touré situation. Apparently, Kolo wants to stay. But Yaya wants to stay. But it all depends whether he suits into the Guardiola philosophy. I mean, when he was at Barcelona,
He didn't.
I mean, he felt...
He played him as a defender.
As a defender, yeah.
As a centre-back.
I remember the one Champions League, I think it was a Champions League quarter-final when Chelsea was playing Barcelona. He literally played as a centre-back, like you're saying. Mm. So I think what he needs to do, like any other coach, he needs to get in there, identify his personnel, make a few additions with people, obviously, that he feels will help him cross the line. And I think, obviously, I've always felt there are players at Man City that actually don't deserve to be there. Your likes of Wilfred Bony, likes of Sami Nasri, your likes of Gael Clichy. I think for a club of the stature of Manchester City, with the other personnel that they have, I don't think those guys...
Sami Nasri!
Sami Nasri.
Come on! That is a quality footballer. And don't take this from my Arsenal background, but I mean, that guy can walk into any starting 11 if fit and on form. He can walk into Barcelona starting 11.
I beg to disagree. Because what exactly did he do at Arsenal? What exactly?
Come on! Because you're in a shit team and you're not winning doesn't mean it's not an indictment on your quality as a player.
I'll give you an example. We've always known how Arsenal have performed over the years, but you get standout players like Robin van Persie.
But Samir Nasri was a standout player in that season when van Persie, and remember it was the triumvirate of Samir Nasri, Cesc Fabregas and van Persie. They were the star players that season.
I don't think so. I think the star players of that season were Fabregas and van Persie. I think their combination is what I give credit to for everything that happened at Arsenal in that season.
Oh, and the guard is in the building. João Matthews, would you like to give this man a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen? João Matthews in the building, ladies and gentlemen. João Matthews in the building. With the fade, immaculate. What is this?
I'm back.
Just hold on, João. Let me get you mic'd up. Oh, man. So let's keep talking about Southampton 3, Liverpool 2. That was funny.
Have you discussed Arsenal already?
Yeah.
Oh, and the fact that they're going to win the league.
Yeah. You see, this is the Arsenal player I was telling you about.
Yeah, I think we're going to win the league now.
Mm.
I don't know why, but I just have a strong feeling.
You think we're going to win the league?
Yeah. I thought I was watching the games over the weekend, and something just told me that we're going to win the league.
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
But Wenger still needs to go, though.
Yeah, okay. Welcome, Joao Matthews. You missed your most fire intro of all time.
All my intros are fire.
Yeah, no, yeah. They were. How was Windhoek? How was Namibia?
It was good, man. Yeah. The family.
Straight from the flight, straight from the airport, into the football show. The god Joao Matthews. Now, let's move on to Southampton 3, Liverpool 2. 2-0 up and cruising, away from home at halftime. Southampton get a penalty. They miss it. Sadio Mane misses a penalty. And then they pepper LFC's goals with shots until they finally scored in the 68th and 83rd and 85th minute or something like that. How did Liverpool throw this one away? That's one question. And is this symptomatic or emblematic of the kind of season that these guys have been having? I mean, what the fuck?
I don't know what's... Klopp is an enigma to me, man. Jeez. Sometimes he's Arsene Wenger. Other times he's Harry Redknapp.
Sometimes he's peak Arsene Wenger. He's invincible Arsene Wenger.
And then other times he's like Harry Redknapp or something. Or I don't know. Like Liverpool, they still have the same problems they had with Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. Because this guy, because he still hasn't gotten the chance to build his own team. Like he's trying new tactics, but I don't think the players are good enough.
Okay, we've got Jerry on the line. Jerry, what's up?
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jerry, what's up, man?
I just want to say this. The guy who was talking just now is the most bullshit. Sami Nasri should have won a Pelentori.
Yes! Yes, Jerry.
And it's obvious that this guy does not like Man City at all because... Man City took the place of Arsenal in the league. Arsenal is no more. Arsene Wenger had the perfect chance to win because Mourinho was gone. Sir Alex is gone. This was Mourinho's time to to shine, but he didn't.
Yeah.
So fuck that guy.
Basta, what do you have to say to that? That's a wild call from Jerry.
Yeah, that was passionate.
Fuck that guy.
I just got the last part. Like, when I put my headphones on, I heard, fuck that guy.
thank you very much for that call. Thank you. Right, shall we carry on? Okay, Basta, go for it, man.
Well, I understand his frustration. Like any Arsenal fan.
No, but he's not an Arsenal fan. He's a Man City fan. He's saying... Sami Nasri, even when he was at Arsenal, could have been a Ballon d'Or finalist. That guy's quality.
No, but Ballon d'Or is reaching.
Though. He's reaching, but I mean, you know what I'm saying, though. Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
He
could have been a world-class attacking midfielder.
World-class. Yeah. Like, but for his laziness and listening to girlfriends who play tennis.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're getting like 200K a week.
You can do whatever, You can talk shit about.
You're allowed to be lazy.
All right, so let's carry on about Liverpool. 3-2. You're talking about Klopp.
I don't know, man.
What does he do to make the squad better?
I think we'll know when he signs his own.
Is it a personnel problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the tactics work. Attacking wise, the tactics are working, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's
going on. You are 2-0 up in the 68th minute, and you failed. That's 22 minutes left in a game, and you failed to defend that lead, and you go on to lose it 3-2. Not taking anything away from Southampton, but they're not a miraculous side. They're not like marvelous right now under Ronald Koeman anyway.
And Klopp sides have always conceded like a lot of goals because he plays like transition football. Yeah. And that's a very, very, very risky game, especially in the Premier League.
Yeah. Basta?
I agree with the sentiment. Basically, when I look at Liverpool, it's a personnel problem. I think the club over the years have made the wrong decisions. Uh-huh. I mean, I think for any club that wants to compete, obviously with the exception of Arsenal, if you want to compete in present-day football, club football, you need the right players, you need the right manager. Yeah. And I think the appointment of Jurgen Klopp was a move in the right direction. Mm. But I think he hasn't had the time to buy his own players. He hasn't had the time to build his own team. He has taken over from Brendan Rodgers. And I feel some of the personnel at Liverpool are not worthy.
To be Liverpool players.
To be Liverpool players.
Oh, wow.
And also to be coached by him, probably.
Exactly. I actually think the next season will be Liverpool season.
Oh, shots fired. Wow, really?
I also think so. I agree with that.
Okay.
The reason I say so is, I mean, he's coaching the very team that Brendan Rodgers was coaching. And Brendan was failing to get results out of those boys. The moment he landed at Anfield, it's like, I don't know what happened. These guys all of a sudden are playing for the manager. All of a sudden, there's a hype at Anfield. Yeah. And I think given a situation or a scenario where he gets to buy his own personnel, he builds his own team, is, I think that will be the rise of Liverpool.
And also another thing, Klopp is very good with young players.
Yeah.
So you can already see him integrating a lot of the youth. And once he...
The youths.
Once he signs his own players,
yeah,
and also gets some players from the academy, I think he can implement his tactics because he likes using. I read an interview where he said he likes using risky tactics with young players because they're more willing to do that because they have no fear.
Yeah.
So I think once he gets the right, once he can have a proper preseason, that's also very important. Once he can have a proper preseason, I think we can judge him.
Okay, we'll move on to Spurs 3-0 against Bournemouth, and they continue their winning fine form with goals from Harry Kane and whoever
Harry Kane just keeps doing it, man.
Yeah,
He has proven me wrong.
He has also proven me wrong. He's not attractive. He doesn't have swag.
Swag. But
he still scores goals, man.
And also, he doesn't do anything
spectacular.
Spectacular. Yeah. He does all the basics really
good.
he doesn't, there's nothing, there's no flaw in his game because he doesn't have too little pace, but he's not very quick, and his touch is good. He does everything really well.
I
was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he said Harry Kane might beat Shearer's record because it's the first time a player has scored 20 goals or something in his first two seasons.
Really?
Yeah, and he's really young.
All right, Basta, your thoughts on Harry Kane and Spurs, how they're going about their season quietly.
I think they're a team on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know, I might stand to be corrected, but I think they deliberately lost to Borussia Dortmund in the Europa
League. Yeah,
solely
so.
to
concentrate on the league. Yeah.
And I feel they can really give it a good punch. I mean, I was looking at their fixtures. I don't know.
It looks a bit difficult.
Yeah, they're kind of difficult, but at the very same time, if you look at Leicester City's
they have
fixtures
West Ham
as well, they're more or less the same.
Yeah.
But I actually think when I look at Tottenham's fixtures, they're actually better than Leicester City.
Yeah.
So I give them a good chance. I mean, Leicester City just have to slip up once.
Game on.
And
I think Leicester will drop at least.
But we've been sitting here the whole season and we've been waiting for this bubble to burst.
Because it's coming. They're going to drop at least they're going to drop points in three games. I'm telling you.
I don't know, man. I just don't see Leicester in the way they're playing
and
right now.
You see their feature list because
they're
the
grinding teams, results.
And
they're
also the thing
them.
With Leicester is, they're getting closer and closer. Yeah. The pressure's gonna build, and they're barely getting results now. Mm. And also they're playing teams that are also fighting relegation.
Mm.
It's going to be a bit more difficult for them. I'm telling you, they're going to drop points.
I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's come to the business end of the season. It's no longer your ordinary, Monday game that you play, your Saturday game. They have a mission. They're close to the end. And it takes a different kind of mentality. It takes a different kind of spirit for you to get over the line. And I don't think any of those Leicester City players have had the experience before.
These guys had the experience of fighting a relegation battle 12 months ago. It's the same pressure. It's just negative pressure when you're fighting relegation.
Like 20 years from now, nobody remembers anyone who fought relegation.
It's negative pressure.
remember the Premier League champion.
It's negative pressure if you're fighting relegation.
It's a different
relegation.
Type of pressure, dude. Like, if they had... Was Cambiasso at Leicester?
Yeah, he was last year.
If they still had, a Cambiasso, because he's won...
Who's won things,
everything. Yeah, two or three of those guys, you could be like, they could. Yeah. But if they don't drop points, I would be like, they deserve.
Yeah.
They deserve this. But the fixture list looks a bit difficult.
Yeah, so they won 1-0 against Crystal Palace anyway. With a beautiful goal again from Riyad Mahrez. Play of the season?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It has to be, man.
It has to be play of the season, man.
Definitely.
And then we go to Barca's team. Chelsea 2, West Ham 2. Hammers earned a valuable point away. And it's a public secret now that Antonio Conte is coming into Chelsea and he's going to be the guy who's going to be, taking off. What's Conte going to do that? Jose Hiddink hasn't done badly at all. I mean, he's...
I think he's going to stabilize the defense.
Yeah.
He's going to also... I think the reason they want him is they want another Champions League run.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's going to... And also, I think they also just want to go in a different direction because Jose Hiddink is... It's at the tail end of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, Conte is coming in with new ideas.
And he's always a band-aid. You can't...
Exactly. So Conte is coming in with new ideas. He's going to bring
Is Conte a continuity manager? Is he knocking on the door of some team to try and become a legacy manager? Because, I mean, we have one legacy manager left in world football.
I think that era is over.
The era of legacy managers is over.
It's done because there's too much money in football now.
Yeah, results.
Yeah, results. People don't have patience. Yeah. It's done now.
All right. Pastor?
Yeah, to answer your question, what Conte is going to do, I think if you look at the Chelsea squad, basically they're on the defense and the midfield. The guys, you know, 28, 29.
Geriatrics.
Yeah.
In world football terms. Geriatrics in world football terms.
Your John Terry's, your Gary Kayo, your Ivanovic. Yeah. I mean, they're guys that are over the hill.
And then you've got Cesc Fabregas who runs like a 40-year-old.
Exactly. So I think Chelsea is in need of a new cycle. The guy needs to come in. They buy youths, rebuild a team, have another 4-year cycle.
By the youths.
And also, he's very tactically astute, man. Like
Conte,
I think I want to see them in the Champions League with him.
But that's like 2 seasons from now.
Yeah, but because you know, with English teams, we've gone backwards. In the last six years.
Yeah,
I think that's why they're signing those type of managers.
Continental managers to bring about a new je ne sais quoi into the game. Okay. We shall move along swiftly to La Liga, where Real Madrid pummeled Sevilla 4-0. The BBC are reunited and firing on all cylinders. How important are both Karim Benzema and Gareth Bale to the balance of the Real Madrid team?
Benzema is the most important player for Real Madrid because although he plays as a nine, he's actually
a 10 and a half.
He's a playmaker.
Yeah.
It's basically like if Ozil could finish. Because he's the one that plays through balls for Ronaldo and Bale. He drops deep sometimes to help with the build up, so they run beyond him. He also can run beyond the defense.
But and he's most, quick, yeah.
Yeah, but and he's got great technique. Yeah. He can pass the ball. Mm. He's the most important player. If he's not in the lineup, there's a problem up front because now Ronaldo has to move too much. Because Benzema takes so much pressure off the two of them. Okay. Bale's also important because Bale on the other side gives Ronaldo a bit more space.
Okay.
Yeah, but Benzema is very important, man. He's underrated.
No, definitely. Basa?
I totally agree. I think Benzema's greatest asset is his build-up play, which you don't get from Gareth Bale. With Gareth, you know you're going to get width, you're going to get speed.
Yeah.
But in as far as build-up play, like he was trying to explain, I think he's a man that's able to provide the service that's required for Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Who else do you think at nine can do it as well? Maybe Zlatan?
As well as Benzema.
But Zlatan doesn't have the pace of Benzema.
But the build-up, they
are pretty much on par, I think. Yeah. They're,
but I can't think of another nine that has that playmaking ability that Benzema
has. if you play Antoine Griezmann as a nine, he'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
If you play Antoine Griezmann, he's got that, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Real Madrid 4-0 to Sevilla. BBC back. And then we only mentioned Valencia here so we can laugh at Gary Neville. It's not like it's on telly, mate, is it? It's not on telly. So, Celta Vigo beat them 2-0 at home. Valencia CF. And Valencia, Peter Lim, his Gupta. Peter Lim is essentially a Gupta. That's what Peter Lim is. Peter Lim is a Gupta. He just gave his friends his football club. He says, run it for a little bit and we'll see what happens. So, despite...
And now it looks like South Africa's economy.
Yeah, now it looks like South Africa's economy. Valencia is now South Africa's economy. So, despite even losing... Peter Lim came out and said that they're going to keep Gary Neville until the end of the season and then he's off in the summer.
Yeah.
But Valencia are such a big club.
And I had such high hopes for them this season. Yeah. I even told you guys.
Yes,
my dark horses for the Champions League.
Valencia.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, no.
They've got great young players.
Great
stadium, great support.
Great financial backer.
Great financial, great blesser.
Great blesser. Good a blesser.
I don't know, but I don't know how they went from there to Gary Neville.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Oh, yeah, a note from you on Iwobi. Do you want to say something on Iwobi?
I told you. The Nigerian flourisher. I told you. No, but I'm proud of him because he was under the radar.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, because all the other youngsters got all the shine.
Yeah.
And he's basically the player we needed for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Like that wide playmaker can score and assist
and run
as well.
Beyond defense.
Because the last one we had was maybe Nasri.
Fleb?
Yeah, Nasri. Yeah.
Nasri and Fleb were like...
Ashavin was supposed to be that guy, but...
But he wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, he loved hamburgers too much.
He loved hamburgers too much. Then we move on. Surprisingly, Barcelona drew with... Villarreal, actually, it was 2-2 at what's the Submarine Stadium? What's that place called? Yeah. Wherever they play.
I think didn't Villarreal get robbed? Like Barcelona,
yeah, they did
got
get
a penalty.
Robbed, yeah, they got a penalty. That wasn't a penalty. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about Barca and Villarreal.
Barca basically have it wrapped, man. They're coasting now. And but Villarreal, there's their defensive midfielder Bruno, very underrated.
He's a
beast.
He's beasting.
He's amazing. I don't know why he hasn't moved to a bigger club yet. He's like 30 years old now. He should be playing
Isn't he the guy with the long hair or something?
No, he's got like a fade or something.
He's got a fade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that?
That's how you know he's good.
Atleti also lost to Sporting Gijón. 2-1. And then so that means the gap between Atletico and Real Madrid is now 1 point, and it's still 56 or 67 points for 76. I don't know. But
yeah, Barca still have, Barcelona.
Barca still have like a huge cushion.
Nine points clear.
Barca are basically just chilling now. They're basically resting their team for the Champions League.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the what is this? The news. Our second segment for this week. We're going to discuss some news, some sexism in sport. We're going to discuss some bribes in football. We're also going to discuss. What I don't know, cancer or something, I don't know. Yeah.
World peace.
Yeah. Meta world peace. We're gonna discuss. But anyway, we wanna talk about. Okay, let's start off with the news. So the reports in the Ebola of media, who we call the British media, we call them the Ebola of media. The reports claiming that Mesut Ozil wanted to leave Arsenal, and Mesut Ozil has come out and stated unequivocally that he is not leaving Arsenal despite Arsene Wenger still being in charge. My question to you guys, is this a case of mischief headline making on the part of the press? Or is there more to this story?
Is there more to this story, or is it just
mischief making?
I think it's just the press.
No, but I mean, there have been rumors of a contract being on the table for Mesut Ozil since December, when his assists racking was, you know, he was giving people assists for free. And apparently his team had said unequivocally to Arsene Wenger and Arsenal that they want to wait to see how the season goes before they commit again.
I think
Arsenal in danger of losing Mesut Ozil?
I don't think so. I think he'll stay one more season.
Okay.
Yeah, because
Duncan says he's going to Man City.
Nah, Guardiola won't buy Ozil.
Why won't Guardiola buy Ozil?
Because he doesn't play with the 10 anymore.
Okay, he doesn't though. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, Basa, what do you think about Mesut Ozil?
My personal opinion is that a player of his caliber and stature, I think he's just tired of not winning anything.
Yeah.
And I think a player of his caliber will look for teams where he's got the capability of winning silverware.
PSG and Bayern, maybe.
Yeah.
I think those are the only two.
The rest will be the downgrade. It'll be a downgrade. He has to go to either PSG or Bayern. But I mean, he came to Arsenal from Real Madrid. So it was a downgrade enough for him to do that.
And also for him to leave, it'll be like, have to be like big money. So he won't leave for like a small... Unless he goes to like a... Wolfsburg in Germany that can afford to give him massive wages.
Yeah, because he'll be the only player on massive wages.
Exactly, but I think he'll stay one more season.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got a unanimous thing on. Okay, last week, FIFA's ethics committee took an about turn and accused the South African FA of having indeed made a $10 million payment to members of FIFA's executive committee, like Jack Warner, to secure the rights to host the 2010 World Cup.
Oh, by the way, did you listen to Mamadou Gaye's...
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God.
I did.
You did?
He was caving.
What did he say?
I just want to say I'm changing my bio to chairperson of the Mamadou Gaye fan club. He's amazing.
What did Mamadou Gaye say?
He defended South Africa.
Yeah.
And Africa.
In Africa. Yeah. And he was right.
What did he say? What did Mamadou Gaye say?
Basically, how I understood him is that FIFA have always had a culture of bribery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dating back to, you know, God knows how long back.
It's, mm-hmm.
So it's very unfair for them to come out and say the specific World Cup that Africa hosted was, you know, was as a result of some bribery. So basically he was trying to say, let's go back into the books and
see,
look at everything.
Yeah.
Don't come out and single Africa as the only culprit. And
Mamadou Gaye.
And he also, like, he kept stating that this was paid to FIFA.
Exactly.
And then FIFA
took
paid
them,
it to...
They
yeah,
Jack
and then,
Warner themselves.
And then, and then they gave it to CONCACAF.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mamadou was like, look, if I give you a piece of meat and you go and sell that meat or whatever and instead of eating it. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
Because I gave it to you.
Yeah.
So he said that South Africa gave, FIFA knew about this. Mm-hmm. It's not like they gave it behind FIFA's backs. So he was like, no, the problem is with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if those guys didn't use it for what it was supposed to be used, they can't control it. FIFA was supposed to follow up.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Mamadou was, oh man, he's amazing. He's basically like a better version of Sammy Kofor.
Did you see Sammy Kofor last week?
Do a tactic foul.
I was like, this guy is crazy. Anyway, so FIFA basically said that they did not believe in Madiba magic. That's what FIFA has said. Nelson Mandela won us that World Cup, and FIFA have just put that back in our faces. Madiba magic brought Michael Jackson to South Africa. Mm-hmm. Madiba magic is responsible for woke Twitter. Madiba magic is also basically
for the Gaut train.
For the Gaut train.
Yeah.
The Gaut train is here because of Madiba magic, and FIFA basically said fuck you to Madiba magic. So we're gonna say fuck you to FIFA. But continuing with the theme of bribes being paid to FIFA executives and whatnot, FIFA have also come out this week and accused Germany legend Franz Beckenbauer of being the leader of a cabal of executives who paid over bribes to FIFA as well for the 2006 World Cup.
It's not him, but he's one of his boys.
Yeah.
Who was also a
head of the German FA. Yeah.
Was implicated in some fraud or something.
Tax, yeah.
Come on, man.
So, I mean, why are we making a big deal of Africa doing it if Germany has been implicated as well in the 2006 World Cup?
It's because Africa is the easiest target.
Germany beat Madiba Magic by one vote. It was 12-11 in 2006, guys. Mm-hmm. Germany, Madiba was there waiting to lift that trophy, and Germany took it with bribes to FIFA officials.
They let him down.
They let Germany and FIFA let Madiba down. Do you hear that, Germany? You let Mandela down and the people of South Africa. Okay, let's move forward quickly. I want to talk about sexism as well in sport, particularly with regard to the comments that were made by Novak Djokovic and Richard Moore at the recently ended Indian Wells tournament that just happened this week. Mm-hmm. I think it's also called the Paribas Open or whatever, but no one cares. But everyone knows it as the Indian Wells tournament.
Yeah.
Basically, this guy, Richard Moore, who happens to be, I think, a former world number one of South African extraction in the 1800s or something.
That's right.
Came out and said that the women's game and women players in general should be grateful to be playing in an era where there's Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, Andy Murray. Is it Andy Murray?
Mm-hmm.
Andy Murray and Roger Federer. And he says the women's game is hanging on the coattails of the men's game. And then Federer...
What? I have...
What?
I've been watching tennis for years.
Yeah.
And the past few years, women's tennis
is much better. Yeah.
Way more entertaining than men's tennis.
So my question is this symptomatic again of certain sexist attitudes that we as men and as a society in whole have against women athletes?
Yeah.
I mean, how can you say that in 2016 when you have possibly one of the best tennis champions of all time?
The best. In Serena, not one of. If the best.
The best. In Serena
of
Williams.
Of all time.
Of all time.
Of all time.
Of all time. In Serena Williams. How can you get away with that in 2016? What is the problem? What needs to be done?
It's sexism coupled with racism.
Yeah.
I basically agree with what you say, that it's a symptom of the stereotypes that we see in society in general. You see it in the workplace, you see it anywhere, and I think sport hasn't been left behind. And it's very deplorable for a man of that stature heading an organization of that magnitude to come out and say that. I think he's in a better position to know more. So exactly. To answer your question, yes, I think it's sport hasn't been left behind with the stereotypes that exist in our society.
It's part and parcel of the problem.
And I think it's the prerogative of sporting bodies not to be left behind and actually change the culture.
And it's actually scary that someone, like he said,
and you were saying it like, you know, stature, it's so aloof as he said.
Has this point of view because he can influence decisions and stuff like that. So if you have someone, say, someone who's the head of the tennis association or whatever, who decides what happens, which tournaments get where. Like if a person of that stature has that point of view, that would affect how they decide women get paid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's very frightening.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that can be done to help women's position in the game and in sport in general. We are always talking about the Rooney Rule here because I think it's a wonderful tool. Maybe not in the way that they've implemented it, but the fact that it exists is very important. And now the NFL have taken it further and they're trying to get the Rooney Rule to apply to women candidates when it comes to coaching in the NFL. So can we envisage a situation where maybe 5, even 2 years from now, we will have... I'm just putting it out there. Where you can have a woman as the coach of Kaizer Chiefs.
2 years. I think maybe 200 years from now. Because I just don't see like a bunch of like 6 foot dudes listening to a tight. I just see their point of because
it makes
sense. Jock mentality. Yeah. It's going to take a lot of unlearning first. And that has to be like societal, like he said. Once society has a different point of view, I think that'll seep into sports and whatever. Because it doesn't. Because sports is it shouldn't be insulated.
That's right.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm going to direct this question to you though, because tennis has done really well in that regard. Because prize money in tennis is the same for men and women.
Yeah.
And for most of the Grand Slams, anyway. So it's a bit of a step backwards for them for them to have this kind of discussion.
Yeah.
Especially in light of the strides that they've made.
That's why we're saying a guy of this stature, man.
Yeah. He can change things exactly. And what about in the South African context? So Banyana inherently do better than Bafana.
Yeah.
On every stage.
Yes.
Everywhere they go, they'll go to the Olympics. They'll kick ass. But again, we have the same thing where they are. Bafana are lauded more as an example or as the symbol of the national sport, if we can call it that. But what must Banyana do to get, you know, like,
I think first
give us some recognition.
It's because they're kind of being erased by the media.
Yeah.
So firstly, the media if they broadcasted their games at peak times, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That would help if newspapers reported it more, if it's more on the front page more, it's just because people aren't aware. Mostly that's also another thing. Like if you ask someone, do you know when Banyana's next game is, they wouldn't know because it's not reported.
But I mean, we discussed this and we're talking, it's not about the fact that those games are less entertaining.
They are very
entertaining
and they're good.
Very, very good. I mean, we saw the Women's World Cup last year and we were like, you know. Basa, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a paradigm shift in how the media approaches, you know, their reporting and how they do their work.
You can tell we're sitting with a real blogger here. Yeah. There needs to be a
paradigm shift. Yeah.
Yeah,
buzzwords.
Everything that we see and hear is based on the media. And if there's a shift in the way the media do their job, I think, and give exposure to more of the women events, like he was putting across, I think that's, you know, it to come across. I mean, just recently we had the English cricket team here in South Africa.
Yeah.
Little people knew that the English women's team were here. And I was watching the cricket on SABC.
Yeah.
But you would only see the men's game and not the women's game. But they will play immediately before the men's. And I ask myself, how are you ever going to grow the women's game?
Perfect example. Like, or say like for on a Saturday, instead of showing just a Bafana game or a Premier League game even at 3 o'clock, show if Banyana playing at the same time as a Premier League team, show it and don't show it like on SuperSport 15. Show it like on SuperSport 3 so people can watch it. Because if you're gonna put it on a channel that people rarely watch, they're not gonna know about it. I think that's the first step, because most people don't even know that like he said, the English cricket team was here. How are you gonna know about it?
Okay. So the blame lies squarely with the media.
The media and ourselves as well, man. Like, so it, like, we need to change our mindset, because so like if you ask a dude if he thinks men's tennis, if he'd rather watch like Djokovic and Nadal or Serena, and
I'll watch Serena any day.
Exactly.
I'd rather watch Serena any day.
But a lot, like, this dude probably has the mindset of, he still thinks it's the Federer era where that time it was better.
Yeah.
But right now,
nah.
Yeah, it's not that good.
All right, we move on to our favorite segment, The Laundromat, where we discuss pop culture, a bit of sports news from around the globe, and we just give it a bit of our twist and how we think it should play out and who's a wolf and who's not. Jonas Gutierrez has accused Newcastle as a whole squad, crew, and a team, and their then-manager, Alan Pardiola-Pardew, of sidelining him because he had cancer. I think he had testicular cancer like 2-3 years ago. And
he beat it.
And he beat it. Yeah. He pulled a Lance Armstrong. And he came back.
With one ball.
With one ball. He came back and he even scored in a game with one pair of testes. Oh, you only have one pair of testes. With one sack of testes.
You need to verify that. But just now the guy has like two.
Maybe he doesn't have any. Yes. But anyway, so he's basically accused. He's taken the matter to like some tribunal, labor tribunal, and basically taking Newcastle to court for sidelining him. And, you know,
they kicked out a cancer patient.
They kicked out Newcastle. You are in the laundromat. How did you kick out someone with cancer?
Newcastle.
Oh my God.
Are basically Jose Mourinho. Because Jose Mourinho poked a cancer patient in the eye. That's what Newcastle are, basically.
Newcastle, you are Jose Mourinho. And but
I'm on his side, man. That was terrible.
Yeah, that was terrible.
And also, after he came back, he played a few games
and he was really doing well.
Yeah, it's not like he was just gone for like three seasons and they were like, look, man.
And I think he was ostensibly gone for a season. And then he came back and he still managed to perform. Hey, man, cool. All right, and then Brazil legend and the most skillful footballer of our generation, Ronaldinho, turned 36 yesterday. Shout out to the big wolf.
The God.
Leicester City are already flexing their Champions League credentials and will be playing against Barcelona and PSG in some prestigious preseason friendlies before the start of the 2016-2017 season. How do you back yourself like that already? Now we must play Barcelona. Yeah. Oh, man. What do you guys think?
I mean,
Wolves or not?
I think it's a wolf move.
It's a wolf move.
Yeah. If you think you're going to win the league, you can't be arranging preseason games against like Notts County. Can't have a league champion playing. You want to play Barca and Real Madrid, team of that caliber, man.
All right.
And also, Leicester City's owner, didn't he make like a huge profit?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Shout out to that guy.
Shout out to that guy.
He's a wolf.
A Brazilian judge has found Neymar guilty of tax fraud in his home country of Brazil, obviously. We just hope that Neymar does not take Barcelona's club slogan more than a club to heart by engaging in further tax fraud, child labor, and doping like his teammate Lionel Messi.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But so what do you think? Neymar, guilty, tax fraud.
Yeah, I guess the law is the law, eh? Mm. And, I mean, great footballer, great player. We can't take that away from him.
Terrible accountant.
I think
terrible accountant. Terrible dad.
Yeah, I think he would have been better advised. You know, whoever handles his financial side of things, I think they let the man down. I don't think he even understands what happened.
Yeah, like if you had to ask you, like if you had to give him a balance sheet, do you think Neymar would know like what's going on there?
Nah,
I think Neymar's dad is behind all of this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
His dad is.
Let's blame it on the dad.
Yeah, blame it on the dad.
And then speaking of Lionel Messi, he showed just how much of a despicable human being he is by whacking a ball into the stands and hitting a very beautiful lady in the face. Her only crime was being a Villarreal fan. That's what happened. She was unconscious or something, like a concussion. He hit a ball 25 yards into the stands, man.
Hey, maybe she said something.
She's 25 yards out, like up into the stands. Hey, what?
Have you seen how quick Messi is? Maybe he's got amazing hearing.
Oh, whatever. Like
he could have heard.
Messi is just a doping, tax evading, child labor.
Five-time Ballon d'Or winner.
And then Karim Benzema has been implicated in some more money laundering scandals in France. On top of his Matthew Valbuena sex tape extortion scandal. Karim is just a prince of Lyon's underworld, isn't he? He's Michael Corleone.
This is why you can't trust a man with a beard.
But you've got a beard.
No, this is barely. Like, he's got a full beard. He's got the Drake beard.
Yeah.
Ever since Drake got the beard, he became untrustworthy.
Oh, wow.
Like, he took a right turn.
He took a right turn?
After the beard.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he's not sad anymore. He's calling Ubers for girls. Like, kicking them out.
Oh, man. And then Sporting Lisbon players wore deliberately misspelled tops to highlight the dangers and perils of buying fake and bootlegged merchandise. It did not, however, stop me from getting this fake Montblanc watch that I'm wearing. No, like they were like really like wearing like misspelled names or whatever, whatever. I think it's a good message, but I don't know what that is gonna help.
It's not gonna, dude. If you want the lifestyle,
if I want the fake stuff, I'll get the fake stuff. If I wanna get a replica watch, I'll get a replica watch.
Yeah, until you have the money, you know.
Until I'm financial shape, I'm in financial shape. I don't know how to even start with this. Our wolf of the week, obviously, is Marcus Rashford, who has made a habit of ending title dreams of real teams before going home to study for his chemistry exams. And this, so shout out to Marcus Rashford. It is Marcus, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then finally, this is like so weird. Cat Williams.
Man, I'm so sad.
He tortured and burnt a woman in his bathroom.
I'm sad, man.
And accused her of being a Michael Jackson fan. Dude. Are you a Michael Jackson fan? Are you a Michael Jackson fan? Like, what happened to Cat Williams? Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
As a comedy fan, man.
As a comedy fan.
Still one of the greatest performers on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, just as a performer, he's untouchable. But, yo, man, leave that crack pipe alone.
Man, it's so sad that, you know, this is where he is now, because
I don't know. Is he on crack?
Hasn't he always been on crack?
I don't know, man. But have you seen the pictures?
Of the lady?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
of him now.
Yeah, but he's washed. That perm is washed.
He looks like Al Sharpton, bro.
Yeah, no, he does. Well, that concludes our show for the week. This has been a football show. Remember, actually, let us just thank our guest blogger, Basrashe Chikosi.
Thank you very much.
You can catch Basha's blog on basrashec.vix. That's VIX.com. And you can read a lot of stuff about Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, and Kaizer Chiefs. And Dynamos in Zimbabwe. Because Moses Chunga is the most fire player of all time. Basa, can you tell them about Moses Chunga, please?
Can we please end it here?
Whoever doesn't know, Moses Chunga has a lot of football research to do.
Moses Chunga is the best player of all time. Anyway, this has been the football show. Remember, be kind to strippers. Oh, boobs matter. And may the swag be with you.
This is CliffCentral.com.